This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Hello, and welcome to The Third Age with the Doctor and the Man from Hollywood. I'm the Doctor, Peter Brill, and the Man from Hollywood is David Devon. On this show, we turn the myths of aging upside down, we sort out the scientific and the trendy, the medical and the cultural, and we tell you everything you need to know about living in the third age. Remember, we guarantee, if you listen to us, you will never grow old.
Hi, I'm the Man from Hollywood, David Devon. The third age usually starts somewhere around 45 or 50, and it's a time when you start to feel a strong desire for deeper meaning and fulfillment in your life. Your first age is childhood. Your second age is building your career and raising your family. And the third age is a major change or transition to a whole new set of problems and values and opportunities. So join us as fellow explorers in this journey to discover what brings passion, purpose, joy into this uncharted time of life.
Well, as many of you know, I'm a psychiatrist. I studied... I don't know if they could hear that. David started screaming. I think he went out the window. Which is pretty good from a windowless room.
I know.
Well, that's the last time I was in a psychiatrist's office.
That's what happened to you?
Yeah.
You started screaming? Okay. As many of you know, I'm a psychiatrist. You want to try it again?
Yes, go ahead.
I studied the best universities with the broadest perspective in the country. Yet nowhere in my training was spirituality ever mentioned or accepted. Yet there were clear sacred moments that happened when our souls touched in therapy, and often these were the most important. Subsequently, it became clear that spirituality is essential to life in the third age. People who come to our groups or coaching are often searching to find a deepening spirituality and a source of meaning and purpose in their lives. Our guest today, Dr. Kenneth Pargament, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, has spent his career working to integrate spirituality and psychotherapy. His new book is called Spirituality Integrated Psychotherapy, Understanding and Addressing the Sacred. I pray you stay tuned.
That was cute. I like that.
Yes,
I pray you stay tuned.
Pray.
Well, talking about praying, I did some praying yesterday as it took me 11 hours to get from Las Vegas to my home.
Oh, man.
I think I could have walked. You know how they prostrate, you know, the pilgrims that go to the Laza, they prostrate themselves every step. I think I could have walked and prostrated myself every step and probably beat that.
Does swearing count as praying too?
That's a good line, Bruce.
It was endless.
Sometimes it
was endless.
David, let me ask you this question.
Yeah. Do I look like a terrorist to you?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
David, what were you doing in Las Vegas?
I was giving a speech to the American Institute of CPAs about the third age. Many of them are in the third age, and also about how to deal with people who are in the third age. And I found out some very interesting things.
What did you find out, David?
I found out that most of them are surprised by the fact that it's more important to many of their clients for them to have a good personal feel of what their life is like than just to present them with a series of numbers about what they have and what they need.
Yeah. Life can be reduced to numbers, huh?
It's the universal language, but somehow it doesn't reach deep enough in many relationships.
And in many professional relationships, you know, where you're dealing with people's lives and money, I mean, it's perfectly clear. Just think about yourself. I mean, you have a little more life than just the numbers that add up on your investments and taxes.
Absolutely.
The money exists for a reason, serve a purpose in your life.
Yeah, and there were this was at Caesars, and it was really well done. There were about 1,200 people attending the entire 3-day conference at about $1,000 a person. So they do pretty good, although their expenses are pretty high, and. This was a group of about, I would say, 200 CPAs, and they were really interested. They said that this presentation was really exceptional because usually every speaker talks about the numbers, the business, what to invest, what not to invest, hard times, good times, whatever. This was one of the few times that they heard about the personal aspect of their client, dealing with their clients.
Hmm.
And so it was great. People loved it.
That's great. Well, you know what time it is, David?
Is it already time? No, it can't
yes,
be time.
Yes, it is time, David. I'm sorry, it's time.
It's time for the news story. Well, there's a couple of things that I really want to talk about. The first one is, did you hear that story about the guy who fell 47 stories and survived?
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
This is just a follow-up on it. He was discharged from the hospital to begin rehabilitation. I don't know. This is not a funny story, but this is just an amazing situation. Earlier this month, he regained consciousness and incredibly even began talking to his family and doctors. This was after falling from he was a scaffolding 47 stories.
This is the funny news story?
Yeah, this is the funny news story. But you were talking about spirituality, so I thought the doctor said, if you're a believer in miracles, this would be one.
This would be one, absolutely.
But the real important news story of the day is in anticipation of Valentine's Day, which is coming up next month pretty soon. There's for all the ladies out there who are interested in a new guy or meeting somebody, it turns out that a very famous person is looking to meet somebody. He is the world's hairiest man, and he's looking for a new love on the internet after breaking up with his girlfriend. He's Yan Zhenwan, recognized as the world's hairiest man by the Guinness Book of Records, and he's using an online dating agency. World's hairiest man, there he is.
Wow.
You can't see it, folks.
But he is hairy. You can see it, folks.
He met somebody who he was, and they went together for a while, and they were going to get married. But he said, we got to know each other through the internet, and they've been seeing each other for 3 years, but unfortunately, their relationship came to an end. And there are many reasons that I could speculate that might have happened.
All right, what are the reasons?
But I can't say any of them on the air without being kicked off by Les Carroll. He added, my whole body is covered with hair, and my parents are worried I won't be able to find a wife. And many girls are shocked when they see me in person. You know what this is? This is a great reality show. Give the world's hairiest man $5 million and see how many beautiful women we can get to marry him.
This
what
is
do you
a great
think?
Idea.
It
this
would be a good idea.
Don't you think it's a good idea? If you like that idea, call in, let us know, write to us. We're at thethirdagefoundation.com. Let us know if you like that idea. We'll get that reality show on the air as quick as possible.
There we go.
So, Marissa,
yes.
You like this weather?
I like it enough, except that I have to walk in the rain to school.
I see. But it never rains in Santa Barbara, right?
Not really, no.
Okay, well, today is that day.
Our guest today is Kenneth Pargament. He's a professor of psychology at Bowling State University.
Bowling Green State University.
Yeah. And practicing clinical psychologist. He has published over 100 research studies on the topic of spirituality and health, and has recently published a book entitled Spirituality Integrated Psychotherapy, Understanding and Addressing the Sacred. Welcome to the show, Dr. Pargament.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
I had a question before we even get started about how do you define spirituality, and how does it what does that do with music and kind of interpersonal experiences and the color of the sky and so forth? How are we defining spirituality?
Well, I think of spirituality as what people do to find something sacred in their lives, not only to find something sacred, but to build a relationship with it, hold on to it, and at times transform it. But it centers around the yearning for something that is greater than ourselves.
All right.
Is it about a step? I feel
yeah,
is there
we're
an
getting
echo?
An echo.
We're getting a huge echo. That's it, right? I'm getting. You can. Can you just say it? Oh, okay. We're hearing.
Is there a radio on, or is there anything that could be echoing through your?
No, I don't think so. Not on my end here.
Okay.
Okay. That's right. Actually, it's very pleasing to me because I get to hear the sound of my own voice.
I know,
over and over and over.
Thing.
Ad infinitum. Okay. Sorry about that, Dr. Pargament. Do people, is it something that they want to find or something that they want to connect with? And why is it possible to connect with something that's bigger than yourself?
Well, it seems to be something we may be born with, that kind of yearning for something beyond ourselves. I think as infants it may take the form of an all-protective and loving parent. But even children at a very young age have what we call spiritual experiences where they feel some kind of connection with something beyond themselves or some sense of deeper reality within themselves. And these experiences can be moving and even life-changing for even young children. So I think it's something that we may take with us into the world or bring with us as we enter the world.
You say in your book how the absence of spirituality can result in feelings of loss and emptiness, questions of meaning and purpose, and a sense of alienation and abandonment, and then cries of injustice and unfairness. How is that true?
Well, because I think we're motivated to have a relationship with something sacred. When we lose it, it may be the greatest loss of all. You know, we're used to thinking major life traumas, you know, accident, injury, death, natural disaster, as events that affect us psychologically, socially, and physically. But they can also affect us spiritually because they can challenge our deepest beliefs and sense of what's most important in life, particularly if we feel that's been shaken or lost. So a divorce, a death, whatever, it may be a fundamental loss of the things that we hold most sacred in our lives, and that makes it all the more difficult to resolve.
But in the third age, we find people that come to us continuously who may or may not have had any spiritual or religious background. Some have, some haven't, but are on what seems to be a major spiritual quest, and it has these exact feelings in it.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting that the questions and the doubts and the feelings of loss can be terrible sources of pain and problems, but they can also be a fork in the road that leads to growth and renewal and transformation. And so what we find in our own research is that spiritual struggles are, in fact, this turning point in life. And some people use these struggles as platforms or launching pads for incredible growth. But we also find that some people get stuck in their struggles. They're not able to work them through. And they experience pain, loss, and we've even found that spiritual struggles increase the likelihood of death if they're not resolved.
What did you think of the revelations about from Mother Teresa's diary that she was forsaken for so many years and still tried to walk that path? Was that something that was interesting?
Absolutely, and I think that was a wonderful example of the point that spiritual struggles can be a motivation for development and growth and wonderful acts, but they can also be sources of pain and grief and struggle and loss, and sometimes people experience both at the same time. What's remarkable to me about Martha Teresa's story is how she was able to persevere and persist in her faith in spite of the deep questions that she held. So I thought her story was actually pretty inspirational.
Now, when I was trained in psychotherapy, you know, many years ago, we never mentioned or asked a question about spirituality or religion. Except to try to free people. I suppose if we had a Catholic, we might think that they felt unusually guilty and try to find a way to free them from that guilt. That's about as far as we would pursue, you know, some of these questions. And yet you're advocating a change to that.
Yeah, this is a pretty, you might even call it revolutionary change. I mean, most students and graduate students and medical students have an average of zero classes in religion and spirituality, and that's in spite of the fact that the patients they'll see are, in fact, on average, believers in God, church attenders, and people who will draw on their religion and spirituality is one of the most important resources when they encounter troubles. So the lack of training in this area is really, you know, kind of shocking, even breathtaking.
What is there good evidence that spirituality makes a difference physically in terms of how long people live or how healthy they are or how well their marriages function?
Yeah, there's a lot of evidence that's accumulated over the last 20 years that show persistent links between spirituality and health. For instance, a number of studies have shown that people who attend church regularly live on the average 7 years longer than infrequent church attenders. And actually for African Americans, it looks like there's a 14-year increase in life expectancy for frequent church attenders. It's not just one study. Those findings have been repeated. And, you know, so people are interested now in, well, what is it about church attendance that may instill longer life? But a fascinating finding.
They drink less?
Well, possibly.
Where can we find that?
They drink less, or maybe they have more social support, or maybe they are able to have a better or a stronger resilience to life problems. My own theory is that it's the uplifting music. And particularly in African-American churches, found really powerful emotions and music expressed. But you got to keep in mind that if that's the case, then it's possible that bad church music may work the opposite way. It could kill you.
or we could also say deadheads live longer if it's the music. Just a new bumper sticker.
Right. You were interested in where the study, where you could get the study, David.
Yeah, no, I was interested in what that study is. It really is fascinating to me.
Well, that study was published in a journal called Demography, but actually there's a review of the probably about 20 studies of this kind that have been published as well that are in what they call the fancy term is a meta-analysis that's been published that shows these findings are pretty persistent and powerful. On the other hand, as I mentioned, the flip side is that people who report struggles with God, feeling punished by God, feeling the devil is at work in their lives, we've shown that they are more likely to die over the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of that you can see that religion and spirituality can be a double-sided coin, that they can be resources for people, but they can also be sources of trouble at the same time.
Okay, so now we want to, what are we looking at? We got a break coming up? Okay. I'm so fascinated, I didn't even see we were having a break.
We're waving at him.
Dr. Pargerman, please stay with us.
You're having a spiritual experience.
That's exactly it. And now we'll be right back with the third age. Don't go away.
Listen to Beauty Now, the intersection of cosmetic surgery, longevity, and biomedical innovation for confident decisions in preventative aging on personallifemedia.com.
Well, welcome back to the Third Age. I'm one of your co-hosts, Dr. Peter Grill. I'm here with Marissa Scabasi. And also tagging along is David Devin, the man from Hollywood. Okay. Our guest today is Dr. Kenneth Pargerman. He's a professor of psychology at Bowling Green State University. Did I get it right that time?
Yes, you did.
He's done over 100 research studies, published over 100 research studies on spirituality and health. And you mentioned a study, maybe at our break next we could get you mentioned a meta-analysis of various studies that document longevity and health and spirituality.
Right.
So we'll try to get that. David, you were in the midst of asking a question.
I was?
Yes. Okay, I'll take it.
I know what it was. Yeah. I know what my question is.
Okay.
I was giving a speech yesterday, and in our program, Dr. Pargerman, we talk a lot about the importance of spirituality and a spiritual connection, and somebody asked me, how do you make that spiritual connection? And I sort of gave him an answer, but I think you could probably give him a better answer. Well, how does someone who asks that question, how do you make a spiritual connection? What do you tell him to be able to enable him to do so?
Well, what's interesting is that there are lots of paths to building a relationship with something spiritual or sacred. That's part of the power of spiritual life, that people can approach it in so many ways. So part of the answer to the question depends on the kind of person that you are and which pathway is most resonates most with who you are. For instance, there's the pathway of experience, and nowadays a lot of people are try to foster a relationship with the sacred through some kind of spiritual experience, and it may be an experience outdoors, listening to music, a mystical experience, meditation or prayer. For some people, spirituality is fostered by practices, and the practices may be being involved in altruistic activities or volunteering in the community or being in loving relationships with family and friends. Other people, their way to spirituality is through study and understanding and their beliefs. So it may take traditional forms like Bible study, or it may take non-traditional forms. For instance, I tend to think of my own interest in science as a spiritual activity, trying to discover the make some sense out of the mysteries of the world and uncover them to some extent. So, you know, lots of paths to the sacred.
Yes, there are.
Let's go on to the therapy part of it. You tell a story in there. I'd like to find a way for our listeners. A lot of people have been in therapy or know about therapy. Why is spirituality important for therapy?
Well, for a couple of reasons. One is, for some people, spirituality may be one of the most potent resources that they have for resolving their problems. It's not something, as you noted earlier, that we're trained to address, and yet for many people, it's the spiritual resource that may be key to the solution. And the second point is, on the flip side, is for some people coming to therapy, spirituality is involved in the problem itself. And so the problem they may be experiencing could be spiritual in nature, maybe a loss of meaning, a loss of purpose, or maybe feeling punished by God. These things, these kinds of problems can lie at the root of other problems that they're presenting, depression and anxiety. But whether it's the solution or the problem, it needs to be part of the conversation in the therapy room.
I would love it if you tell Alice's story briefly on the air so people would get a feeling for it.
Is that something from the book?
Yeah, from the book.
Oh, sure. Well, this is, I think, one of the stories that's really moved me and guided me in my own work. Alice was a woman in her 40s who came to my office suffering from bipolar illness, and she'd been treated by a number of psychiatrists and psychologists over the years. Alice was a very plain-looking woman, no makeup, but she did have a sparkle in her eyes, and I liked her right away. She talked about a life of ups and downs, a real roller coaster of emotions from manic periods to periods of the deepest depression when she'd feel suicidal and end up in the hospital. And I worked with Alice for probably a year trying to help offer something different, but I wasn't any more successful than the legion of therapists and people before me. And she was hospitalized a few times over the year. Initially, when I asked Alice about religious or spiritual interests, she said that wasn't really relevant to her. But there was a moment about a year into the therapy where she was, again, very depressed, crying hysterically, and I thought, oh, gosh, she's talking about suicide. I'm going to have to hospitalize her again. But this time she said, oh, when will my suffering end? And the way she said it, it sounded biblical, almost like a lamentation. And so I responded in kind of like kind, and I said, where do you turn to for solace in the midst of your suffering? That's not the way I usually talk, by the way. I don't usually talk about turning to solace.
Well,
but it seemed appropriate for Alice.
Yeah.
And she stopped, and she said, well, I never told anybody this before, but the first time I was hospitalized when I was 13 or 14, I was in restraints, and I was so frightened and so scared. And then I had this warm feeling start through the center of my body, and it spread through my chest. And that warm feeling spoke to me. And I said, well, what did that warm feeling say? And she said, it said, I'm with you, I'll always be with you, and I'll be with you for the rest of your life, no matter how bad it gets. I said, wow. I said, and who do you think that feeling was? Who was that voice talking to? She said, that was God telling me that no matter what, he'd always be with me. It's a very moving moment. I said, have you ever had that feeling since? She said, well, yeah, sure, I have it whenever I'm at my worst moments, and I have it when I'm with people who care about me. You know, like now?
Yeah.
She says, don't you feel it?
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier therapeutic sacred moments in therapy, and that was one for me. And I told her, yeah, I did feel it. And the interesting thing was in this conversation that while she was talking about this mystical sacred experience, she had stopped crying. And we spent the rest of the session just talking about spirituality in her life, and I didn't need to hospitalize her. And I asked her as we were leaving, I said, Alice, why haven't you talked about it with other people, with other therapists? She said, well, they already think I'm crazy. And that was a turning point. And after that moment, we spent a lot of time talking about spirituality and how she might be able to access it more fully in her life. And she was never hospitalized again after that time, with one exception for just a brief period.
That's an amazing, amazing story to me. You know, the thing that I just want to clarify for our listeners, we're not necessarily talking about any particular religion here. We're not talking necessarily Christianity or, right? I mean, we're talking spirituality.
Well, that's right. And it's so fascinating that I find that for some people who come in and see themselves as devout people, sometimes religious issues aren't really relevant to the problem or the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some people who see themselves as atheists or non-religious and non-spiritual, and it turns out spiritual matters really lie at the heart of the problem.
How do you tell as a clinician?
Well,
how does a person tell in themselves?
Well, that's why therapy is such a kind of an art form, because there is no easy answer. Just asking people direct questions about it often doesn't yield an answer, because lots of times people don't even know, or sometimes they're not willing to share something so intimate right away. It takes time to build a relationship, and it takes time to help people discover really what's going on inside them. So it does take some practice and experience and learning how to talk about sacred matters and frankly, showing a willingness and an interest on the part of the therapist to listen to someone's spiritual story. You know, if we as mental health professionals are open to asking the questions and listening to people's rich spiritual stories, people have a lot to teach us.
Oh, that's true.
Great. We're going to think about that for 2 minutes, and then we're going to be back with Dr. Pargament, who wrote this really fascinating book, Spirituality, Integrated Psychotherapy, Understanding and Addressing the Sacred. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Renee Stevens, host of Inside Out Weight Loss. If you want to be a thin person, you have to learn how to think like one. Learn how on my weekly show that aligns mind, body, and spirit for lasting change. Find me on iTunes or at personallifemedia.com. That's Inside Out Weight Loss, How to Think Like a Thin Person, on personallifemedia.com.
We're back. I'm Dr. Peter Brill. This is The Third Age. I'm here with David Debbin, my co-host, and Marissa Scalasi. Our guest today is Dr. Kenneth Pargament, a professor who has written a book on spirituality called Spirituality, Integrated Psychotherapy, Understanding and Addressing the Sacred. Dr. Pargament, where can people get your book? Hello? Wait a minute, they couldn't hear you. Say it again. Where can they get your book?
They can order it online from Amazon, or they can order it from Guilford Press, which is the publication site. They can Google my name, Kenneth Pargament, and it's right there on the first page. And it's actually called Spiritually Integrated Psychotherapy.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
Anyway, what I'd like to do now, I kind of see the progression that we do from, you know, the sick, pathological sick, normal, to super normal, transcendent, so forth. And I'm wondering, for our listeners now, what the insights that you have derived from bringing psychotherapy, which is a form of interaction of people about problems or about life, how they can use that, those insights in the general life to move from wherever they are up that spectrum?
Well, you know what? I think spirituality adds to psychology and psychotherapy is helping people come to terms with human limitations. You know, psychology, psychiatry are really good at helping people develop more control in their lives, either through self-understanding or better communication, developing our personal strengths. But, you know, the fact is that not all problems are controllable. And no matter how well we try to make the most of our skills, sooner or later we run into situations that remind us we're limited and human. But in spirituality, you hear a language that's unfamiliar to psychology, things like letting go and surrender, humility, forgiveness, and transformation. And I think almost all problems have both elements of controllable and the uncontrollable. And so integrating spiritual values and resources in our lives, I think, is what helps make us more completely human.
Let me give an example and see if I can translate what you're saying and see if you agree with it. In all the studies and all the psychotherapy, I had lots of psychotherapy. I'm a basket case, so they had to treat me many, many times, all unsuccessfully. Anyway, the end result of it is, through all that psychotherapy, not once did they ever mention something like, say, gratitude and doing meditations or affirmations, that is, speaking to yourself about what to be grateful for in your life. Now, that's a change in perspective, right? A change in vocabulary, a change in... Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely. I think you've hit it on the head. You know, when I went to grad school, like a lot of people, I went into the field because I was interested in what makes people tick. I wanted to get to the heart of really important issues. But in my training, at least, I found that something was missing. You know, we were taught that we're shaped by our environment, we're shaped by our early childhood, we're shaped by our biology, but something is missing, and that something is that kind of deeper aspect of ourselves. We also are people who strive and seek something beyond just the daily experience, and there is a deeper dimension to ourselves, and, you know, concepts like transcendence and gratitude and letting go and transformation and forgiveness, I think, get at that deeper dimension that has been missing in psychology and psychiatry for a long time. And it's exciting to see that it's finally catching on.
It really is. And David and I have a 7-step model that we try to use for people in the third age. And the very first step is what we call awareness of spiritual energy.
Yes.
You have to start there to get the energy to face this stage of life. And so you'd agree with that.
Absolutely. I think it's the core of who we are, and how do you move people forward if you don't address the issues that are of deepest importance?
How do you think spirituality helps you after you die? No, I'm serious.
Does it help your longevity? Is that
no,
what
no,
you're
no,
saying?
No, no, no. I'm serious. Believe it or not, that's a serious question.
Okay. Sorry.
What do you think?
Well, you know, it's the kind of question that we can't study through our scientific methods because there's no way of knowing scientifically what happens when people die. But certainly your beliefs and your faith in a life after death has implications for how you live your life and implications for how other people come to terms with death as well. We know that people who have ways of putting life and death in perspective seem to live more fulfilling lives than people who really don't have a place to put it.
I'll tell you, that's very true. But I'll tell you something that I found out just by working with the CPAs. Well, not that I found out, that I knew. But that I found out that I knew when I opened my mouth and it came out. Spirituality can help you after you die by helping the people that you leave behind. In other words, when you're in touch with your spiritual center and your spiritual energy, there's a very deep love that you have access to, and it's a bond that forms with the people in your life who you love. And that's when you die, that's what's left of you. What's really left of you is that, and the word was legacy because we were talking with estate planners, but there's a legacy there that you leave. And so just as interesting in many ways as life insurance that benefits the people who you love when you die, I think this your spiritual connection is just as important. And yes, I know that we don't know what happens to you when you're gone, but we certainly know that if you care about people when you're alive, certain people, those people will continue to be cared about after you're gone. Does that make sense?
You know, just to add to...
Go ahead.
Just, To add to what you're saying, David, the studies show that there's no correlation whatsoever above a certain income level or a certain amount of money with happiness whatsoever.
Yeah.
So it may be far more important, that legacy that you're leaving them.
What do you think about that, Ken?
That's a wonderful example. And actually, thinking about your spiritual legacy isn't something that you should be doing simply at the latter part of your life. It's really a question that people can ask of themselves even in an earlier age, adolescence, young adulthood, asking, what is it that you want to leave behind? You know, what are the values that you believe are permanent values? And what is the message you want to pass on to the people who will live behind you or, you know, following you? It's a wonderful question that can help shape more meaningful lives.
We're fortunate that we have a young person here in our studio. We can ask that. What do you think, Marissa? What would be your answer to that question?
I think for me, I'd want to have a happy family and just be with the people you like. And I don't think money matters as much as happiness, or I don't know. I want to be able to be surrounded by those that love me.
And what about your spiritual legacy, so to speak? What do you think about that?
Spiritual legacy. That's a
It's tough when you're in your 20s. Yeah.
That may be, Marissa, that may be inherently spiritual, talking about leaving loving relationships and people who love and care about you, that may be very much spiritually meaningful to you. For a lot of people, love is one of the central spiritual values. So love and the sacred are often intimately connected.
I think love is the sacred, one could say, actually.
Yeah.
We have really highly enjoyed this conversation. I hope hope it's been as good for you as it has been for us.
This is great.
Spiritually speaking and in every other way. Your book is Spiritually Integrated Psychotherapy, Understanding and Addressing the Sacred. You are Dr. Kenneth Pargament. We are the Third Age, and we want to thank you for being with us. And come back, please, sometime and talk to us again.
My pleasure.
Okay. Hang in there. We'll be right back.
Listen to Living Green, Effortless Ecology for Everyday People, a weekly online audio program featuring champions of sustainable living at personallifemedia.com.
Well, boy, I'll tell you, talk about spiritual. Welcome back to the Third Age. I'm here with David Devin and Marissa Scavasi, and we've been talking about spirituality and integrated psychotherapy, putting them together, badly needed, major change in the field. It was interesting. I was reading this book recently about Extraordinary Knowing, which is this lady who had this incredible spiritual experience, and she got together a section in the American Psychological Association, which they're talking about people having extraordinary spiritual events in their lives, and some of the most famous people in all of psychology came to talk about, you know, they were ashamed of their experiences, but they came to relate. In fact, there was also, she interviewed some people, and there was a neurologist who's world famous, goes and operates on kings and, you know, famous people, and he had headaches and came to her as a patient. And when she got into talking to him, it turned out he'd stopped teaching. And when she asked him about why he'd stopped teaching, he said, my problem is before I operate, I go down and sit at the patient's bed, and if there's not a white light around the patient's head, I don't operate because I know it's not going to work. And he says, how do I tell my students that?
That's a tough one. You get kicked out of school for that.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, if you're out there and you've been listening to this really interesting discussion on spirituality, psychotherapy, and life itself, you're going to really enjoy the workshop that we do. Actually, there are two of them. One is on February 23rd, coming up, February 23rd. It's a Saturday. It's at Antioch University, and there's going to be a lot of this spiritual discussion in terms of the Third Age. And also at City College, that's the adult extension, I think it's called extension, on March 22nd at the Schott Center, we're doing another workshop at which we will also talk about how to integrate this very, very important aspect of life into your Third Age and maybe get you over some of the some of the trials and tribulations that you're dealing with just in terms of what this change of life is bringing.
So that you can get the absolute most out of this stage of your life. By the way, you can find both these locations and also how to enroll by going to our website, www.thirdagefoundation.com, thirdagefoundation.com, or you can call us at 805-969-9794.
This is David Debbin for Peter Brill and the Third Age. We have another minute?
Yeah.
Oh, she's on the stretch. I'm stretching out. This is David. No, these are some great people that are helping to bring us to you, and some of this stuff that you're learning on our show, and we're learning along with you, is because these people are interesting.
We'll be back next time for another journey into the Third Age.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.